Welcome back to Good Food. Growing up in a Cuban-American household in Florida, Jorge Gaviria thought he knew masa.
You know, I thought I grew up eating the most authentic tortillas. They weren't Mission. They weren't even Guerrero. They were like a local brand from a local tortilleria in Miami, or so I thought. It actually turned out that they were using Maseca, which is what most of the tortillerias across the country use. So they were all pretty much designed to taste exactly the same. They just felt like, you know, that local branding element that made it feel like it was sort of special to my, you know, my hometown. It just had like a Mexican flag on it and very, very bleached white tortillas that tasted as acidic as they smelled. I grew up eating, you know, carnitas on the weekends. My favorite snack after school was a Munster cheese tostada, which is like as much of a cultural collision as you can kind of imagine it to be, made in a toaster oven.
As Jorge broadened his horizons and developed his palate, he started to ask the question, how is a tortilla actually made? Staging at a restaurant in New York, he saw tortillas being made, quote, from scratch, but with Maseca. He wasn't satisfied. At the time, his dream was to open up the equivalent of Tartine Bakery, but for tortillas.
I didn't have any concept or business plan how that would happen. It just sounded really cool. With a lot of confidence and a lot of naivete, I was like, all right, I guess the most important thing here that we need to figure out is the sourcing, because you look around the U.S., even some of the darlings of the heirloom corn movement are all kind of sourcing from similar places. There wasn't a lot of diversity to that story, and I don't think it told the story that I was looking for of the food way of masa, you know, and I think if you're going to trace that, you got to go to Mexico.
During his research trips, Jorge saw how government policies had displaced subsistence corn farmers in Mexico.
And so I thought, man, that's amazing. Like, you know, what if we just leveled the playing field, or at least offered an option to this group of 3 million farmers that are still doing this work and growing the greatest quality corn in the world? What could happen?
When he started Macienda in 2014, Jorge was sourcing most of his corn from Oaxaca. He has since branched out.
I think we're in 6 or 7 states, depending on the year and the harvest. But Oaxaca, despite being one of the smallest states in Mexico, it's about 4% of the total land share. It is the most biodiverse of any state. So you've got, of the 59 land races, 35 of them come from Oaxaca, which is pretty amazing.
The term land race corn refers to heirloom corn that has over many years been optimized and adapted to a particular area and climate.
You couldn't take it and grow it in Iowa with any success. It's been locally adapted for thousands of years and, you know, has a terroir and characteristic all into itself.
Starting a masa company that required him to import heirloom corn from Mexico to the United States meant Macienda had to figure out a supply chain, one that was equitable for the farmers they worked with. The commercialization of quinoa was a cautionary tale. When the ancient Andean grain became popular around the world, the demand drove up the price. Unfortunately, that meant poorer residents of Peru and Bolivia who had eaten quinoa as a staple food could no longer afford it. Jorge Gaviria didn't want the same thing to happen to heirloom corn.
It's really expensive for farmers to take product to market, especially given the rural areas that they live in. To take 200 pounds of corn to a market 2.5 hours away when you don't have a car, you don't have access to public transportation, you know, it's a non-starter. And so they would work with sort of these intermediaries, or coyotes in some cases, as they're known, to get corn to market. Well, sometimes they wouldn't end up getting paid, or they'd get paid half of what they said they would get paid. No one had ever paid cash at 3 to 5 times the commodity price in full and make them whole as soon as harvest was done. No one had ever thought about that, or had certainly ever done it in that way.
From 12 farmers in Oaxaca to a network of approximately 2,000 farmers throughout Mexico, and from 40,000 pounds of corn per year to 2 million, Macienda has grown. But Jorge has had to be careful.
We haven't necessarily scaled with each individual farmer because they're growing for subsistence purposes. So what they grow for themselves is really the priority. And if they have any surplus, that's what we buy. They're not commercial growers in that true sense. They're really subsistence farmers, and we're just giving them that additional surplus opportunity there to sell it.
Compared to the 846 billion, that's billion with a B, pounds of corn produced each year in the United States, it's a drop in the bucket.
When I first started, I had two really strong drivers. The first was I wanted to disrupt, quote unquote, disrupt Maseca and Gruma, and I really wanted to kind of stick it to the man. You know, the truth is that convenient food exists for a reason. There's a reason, there's a whole structure that supports it. And I've been pretty humbled. It's also really hard to produce food at scale. I gotta give anybody who's producing food at that scale credit. No matter what their political or philosophical values are, it's kind of a miracle to do it and, like, frankly, not kill anyone.
Jorge Gaviria remains a student of MASA, but he has also become something of a teacher. This summer, he released a 271-page book, MASA, Techniques, Recipes, and Reflections on a Timeless Staple. The book, which was the inspiration for this episode of Good Food, unpacks the kernel to MASA process while sharing science, history, practical tips, and plenty of recipes. Tlayudas, tetelas, pupusas, atole, waffles, a masa samosa, and a corn dog that actually tastes like corn. For Jorge, it was both a practical and a personal mission.
Masa has been 9 years in the making. I think starting with my initial plunge into the subject, it was something that was really hard for me to train chefs on, you know, how to use our corn when there wasn't more than a page or two in a book anywhere on how to do this. That was the start of it, just seeing some of my heroes get totally flummoxed and humbled by making masa in-house. To me, was an eye-opening experience. Like, man, I think there needs to be a dedicated resource for this.
With all this high-quality masa available, what should we be doing with it? We'll explore that when Good Food returns.